Everybody, and welcome to our last Ocean Curious webcast of 2020. Gentlemen, we have made it through the year. Matthias, Nix, this is something to be celebrated. Yes. I am your host, Micah Hoffman. As always, I am thrilled to be here with two of my colleagues. Stephen Harris, why don't you say hi to everybody?
Hi, everyone. I'm Stephen Harris, also known as Nix Intel. And I'm really glad to be here. And I can't believe it's the end of the year already. Isn't that crazy?
It's exciting. It really is. Because I hate to say, 2021 can't be worse. I don't think I will say that because it'll jinx us, I'm sure. Also, Matthias, say hi to everybody for us.
Hey, everybody. This is Matthias Wilson, also known as MW OSINT. And even though 2020 was a problem in a lot of regards, I do think we got a lot of stuff done. And there are a lot of positive things to look back to and also look forward to. So I'm also happy to, spend the last webcast podcast of the year with you guys talking about some of this.
Well, and that's very good that you said that, Matthias, because this podcast is going to be a little bit different than our last ones. Matthias had the idea that we should maybe take a retrospective look at what we've been doing. And looking back across 2020, I truly am amazed at the number of blog posts and 10-minute tips and videos and webcasts that we've put out, and gosh, the number of guests that we've interviewed. So today on our webcast, on our podcast, we're going to be changing the format a little bit. The first thing I would like to do is to go ahead and show you our website. I know this is something that you probably have been to every day, our Ocean Curious website, but there's a special page here called About Our Project that doesn't get as much love as it should. And I just want to take a moment here at the end of 2020 to note that we have, within the Ocean Curious Project, elected new board members. These are our executive board of directors for the 2021 year, with myself as president still, Nico Dakins as vice president, Laurent Bodo, webcast manager, Sector 035 as our blog and blog content manager, Ray Baker as our marketing manager, and our very own Stephen Harris as our secretary. So we are really excited about some of the cool things that we have coming up in 2021. We've got some great plans to change up what we've been doing. And I can't share a lot of these things with you right now, but stay tuned. 2021 is going to be really, really good. I also want to mention that right now we have some advisory board members, John Turbush, Josh Huff, Matthias Wilson, right there, Ritu, Michael James, and Technizet, who are advisory board members. And together, these two groups make up all of the Ocean Curious board and advisory board members. And these are the people that over the past year have made some incredible, incredible contributions to what I think is the Ocean world through what they've written, what they've produced, and I'm incredibly proud of their progress. I had recently, took a look at our very first webcast, which was January of 2019, so almost two full years ago. And it is incredible to watch the progress that we've made from who's on it to the backgrounds behind us to, I mean, look at this, Michael James with a Van Dyke and not the huge beard and Kirby and, just the things that we've done are changing. I do want to, before we get into looking back at our year, I do want to just talk briefly. This is the giving season, and here at Ocean Curious, we don't talk a lot about supporting us. We do have fees, we do have expenses, whether it's our Zoom platform or some of the other things that we do to run our project. We do have expenses, and I want to more say thank you to those organizations and those people that have reached out and said, hey, you know, we like your project, we like the products you deliver, and they've decided to help us out by sponsoring us. So I want to just shout out to all of our sponsors from Osen Combine and Hunchley, Spiderfoot, Rendition InfoSec, Aware Online, Neon Sentry, Plessis Expert Network, and my own company as well. But the majority, well, not the majority, but a lot of our support, I would say, I'm just thinking about it. Yeah, probably at least half of the support for our project comes from people like you that donate $1 or $5 a month or a yearly donation to make our project, well, solvent, to make sure that we can produce this content. And so on this page here, the sponsors and contributor page, we have all of the people that have contributed at least $5 a month or more and have consented to their names being on this page. So thank you to everybody. If your name doesn't appear on this page because you wanted to maintain your privacy, thank you and thank everybody for contributing. If you are a person that does have some funding here at the end of the year, I know 2020 has been really hard for everybody. If you do have some money that you'd like to throw at an official U.S. government nonprofit organization, or actually a nonprofit organization recognized as a 501c3 by the United States government, we could really use whatever you can spare, whether it's $1 a month or $10 or even more. We also, through our Patreon, can accept annual lump sum contributions as well. And if you're a company and you want to sponsor us, we would really appreciate that too. And you're welcome to reach out to sponsorship@osintcurio.us and we'll talk to you. Also, there's a lot of people out there that we haven't really thanked for their work. And those are the people that have written guest blog posts or given us ideas to talk about on the show or for videos and things. We do have a contribute page here, and this contribute page shows you, well, how you can help our project with your products and with your ideas, because really we want this to be a community project. Want this to continue to be a community project with you participating. We have a form here where you can submit your ideas, and many of you have. We have the financial aspect, and we also have blog post stuff that you can send us as well. I know that's a lot of talking by me, but you know what? I'm really, really excited for what 2021 has in store for us. I've met with our new board members, and we've got some really interesting directions that are going to change how we deliver content to the community. It's going to be really cool. So I think that's enough by me. Matthias, Nix, how are you doing? Been a good couple of weeks for you?
Yeah, it's been a crazy year. It's like, who's going to go first? Oh, dead heat.
You were first.
Oh, I threw you both off.
Yeah, it's been a really good couple of weeks, actually. Before the last time I was on here, myself, Technoset, and Matthias were preparing for the 3i conference, which was a closed conference this year. But it's a law enforcement OSINT conference in the UK, and that went really, really well. And that was a lot of work. But I learned a ton, and Matthias's talk and Techniset's talks were really, really good. And now, yeah, so it's been a slightly crazy couple of weeks after that, but yeah, pretty good. I learned a lot from the conference.
Cool. And there's
a lot throughout the complete year. I mean, you guys talked about this last week, and I knew that, I remember that Ritu mentioned, and also Nico, that whenever they participate in courses and even as experienced OSINTers, they always learn something new. And going back through everything that happened this year, I don't think there is a day that has gone by without me learning something new, which is so amazing.
Well, yeah, and that's one of the things that I think Ritu and no, actually, in the very first webcast that we did back in 2019, one of the questions that I posed to Ginsburg and Nico at Kirby was, do you feel that the OSINT community is opening up? Because a while ago, the OSINT community kept a lot of their secrets, a lot of the techniques and things, kept them close to their chest because the fear was, the more that's out there, the more the bad guys will know how we're finding them, and it'll be harder for us to do our jobs. So I guess, Matthias, Stephen, what do you think about that? Have we become more open as an OSINT community, or are we still holding back?
The short answer, yes, I think we have become more open, but I think that's kind of inevitable because the amount of knowledge you have to become a good OSINT practitioner just grows and grows and grows. And you have to get that from other people. I think Nico has the saying, like, there's no way you can know everything. You just can't know everything. So to share knowledge, you have to open up knowledge a little bit. But I don't know, I'm kind of on the fence about this one because I get from one perspective, you don't want the bad guys to know your techniques. And it's the same thing in information security too. You don't want the bad guys to know their techniques, but the bad guys will probably find them anyway. With open source stuff, I think if a technique is truly open source, like it, anyone should be able to do it with the right knowledge. And it's kind of hard to gatekeep. You can't say, oh, this is my secret technique that no one can. But if it's an open source technique, guess what? You can't seal it off and keep it to yourself so easily. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I'm waiting for the day when somebody tries to patent an OSINT technique. It's like, yeah. Oh, I've discovered this technique for extracting this from site. I'm going to go ahead and submit it.
Been done. So every once in a while, I do look into patent databases and I stumble across things like that where people are trying to patent like a certain way of more from a technical perspective, but finding things that I can do manually. So I do it manually. They do it in an automated way, which a lot of you do more than I do with Python, but there are patents out there in regards to OSINT. And I speak to people in the industry every once in a while, and there is the drive to kind of patent something, put it in their own little software. And I'm like, well, that's common knowledge and everyone does that. And I know people that write little Python scripts on that. So I don't think that's the right way ahead, but you know, people have to make money. So that is going to happen. But I think also when you look at the OSINT community and even though I've only been on the scene, well, openly on the scene for roughly 2.5 years now, I've been out there for 2 decades. But what I think is happening now is that there are more and more people coming together, like groups like ours, OSINT Curious, or the whole Trace Labs environment, or different Slack or Discord channels or chats or something like that, where communities get together and share things. And I just remembered, like, let's say 15 years ago, when I was really, really heavy into OSINT, or started getting into OSINT on a daily basis, we didn't have that. You really had to do OSINT to do OSINT. So go out and find people that had the knowledge. You couldn't contact them directly. That was kind of spooky. I mean, 15 years ago, you didn't just contact people on the internet. So now it's a lot different. And the entry barrier to find things and to also get in contact with people is much lower at the moment. You just send a DM to someone on Twitter and you might receive an answer. That's great.
Yeah. And you know, looking back, I remember the certain groups that you could join, the certain forums you could join that were, this person, or there'd be a training class and this training class would have this forum. And so that you'd get almost like acolytes, you know, it's like, I subscribe to this person's way of doing things. And so I'm following them on these message boards and I'm participating in conversation, but you can't do this unless you take our class. It's interesting because I am seeing more and more Discords and Slacks and stuff at OSINT team, you know, that are just open to the community. And the question becomes, should there be one source, or is it okay for there to be so many fragmented sources? Because I'm still hearing from people that are like, you know, I go into this place, but it doesn't feel right for me. Are there other places? I'm in favor of them being as many open source intelligence groups as people want, because I think the larger that they get, that sometimes the noisier they get and the harder it is to find real content, data, people, whatever. What do you think?
First off, there is not one OSINT. We all have a different understanding of what we can use OSINT for. We have different methods and techniques in regards to how we do investigations. Someone that is in threat intelligence has a complete different understanding of what he or she is doing than someone that is in fraud intelligence, for example. The basic methodologies is the same. It's you know, going by the intelligence cycle and trying to find information on analyze that according to your customer's needs, but the specific techniques differ. So you can't really summarize all that in one place or one group. But then again, since there's so much out there, and there's so many groups and there's so much noise, we're back to the point where you have to do OSINTs to learn about OSINT, because you really have to figure out what do you need and where do you find it.
Your thoughts, Nick?
Yeah, I really am in favor of the fact of there being a really wide range of different communities, because like OSINT, it's so broad now. What if you ask people what they consider to be OSINT, and we've had this before where we have recruiters, but they call it sourcing, and they have journalists and they might call it something else, and they have law enforcement who call it something in threat. And there are so many different strands to OSINT. The idea of having it all in one place just seems... it wouldn't be desirable. You need these little specialisms, sub-specialisms to spring up all over the place, I think. But yeah, I guess it kind of comes down to something I know we talked about recently. When you have all these communities, the downside of all the noise that they can generate sometimes, and finding the good quality stuff, the reputable stuff, can become a little bit harder, I find, sometimes.
I don't know. I think that's the biggest problem for new people in the business, is that there is so much out there that it's really hard for them to find a platform where they can get good quality information. Of course, you know, the more people that are in this business, the more, I wouldn't say rotten apples you have, but maybe people spreading information that is not 100% correct, not that ethical. So these are things you have to consider as well. I mean, just because it's on the internet doesn't mean it's true. And this also applies to our OSINT information that we put out there on techniques and methodology.
Yeah. And I think one of the ways that a lot of people have found resources is by following like a hashtag in some social media application, whether it's Twitter or LinkedIn, or I mean, all of the social media sites are basically the same now, right? I mean, they all have stories and stuff, but following that OSINT hashtag sometimes can be very misleading, because you two and I probably look at the things that are being shared. And I know I've been watching Twitter, and sometimes I'll see something like, ooh, that's not OSINT. They use the OSINT hashtag, but that's an active tool to put something in somebody's web browser and then track them across the internet, or something that's illegal or unethical in certain countries as well. Do you find that too? You kind of get that cringe when you see stuff being shared?
Definitely. And just looking at my Twitter profile, for example, I started out following a lot of people, and I'm like kicking people out of that list on a weekly basis. So there's just so much information out there, and there's an information overflow, and not all of it is correct or relevant to me. So I'm just really trying filter out what's relevant and not. And as you said, there are a lot of accounts out there that basically misuse OSINT for like propaganda. I see that as well, that someone's like, oh yeah, I have this OSINT investigation, and you look into it and then you see, oh no, this is very biased in a certain direction.
Yeah.
And I absolutely 100% agree with you on that. I think it's kind of, the last couple of years, OSINT has become more prominent in, along with digital forensic evidence, in journalism, for example, much more so than it would have been maybe 5 years, 10 years ago. But the downside to that is it kind of, I say, the political bias that often goes behind some reporting. So I find it's crept its way into some OSINT work as well. So now people will do, I know we've got an example coming up, but people will do perhaps work that's really quite partisan, and then label it as OSINT and chuck a few digital things in there. to give it credibility, when and that becomes very popular and it can be very viral, but actually when you probe into it, it doesn't pass the test. And that's a little bit of a concern, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, the point is that now the hashtag OSINT has become so popular that it gets a lot of views or a lot of eyes on a topic, but sometimes people are using it just to get their issue, their propaganda, their other things out and eyes on it. It has nothing to do with actual OSINT, which is frustrating. But Nix, you mentioned this article, I think, right? The
Steve Califf. Yeah.
Do you want to tell about it? You want me to tell about it?
I'll do sort of a brief summary. It's a bit, I really wanted to write about this, but I sort of imposed a no politics rule on myself for Twitter and my blog, so I didn't. But the long story short was this: obviously, in the States, has been the issue around the election results being appealed by some of the Republican Party, and there was this scandal or so-called scandal erupted over the Dominion voting system, which is the Dominion being the software that's used to run a lot of the voting machines. And basically, this guy had used Spiderfoot, which we all know is a great OSINT tool, to investigate the domain name around Dominion voting. And if you've used Spiderfoot before, you know it's an awesome tool and it will pull out so much information from so many different sources. And this guy had basically thrown the Dominion voting domain into Spiderfoot and really uncritically just pulled out every little result from it without any real analysis, and sort of concluded, well, that there were links to China, and I think that there might have been a link to Russia in there somewhere. And it was
Germany, don't forget that.
Oh, yeah, Germany. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't OSINT. It was, I'd say, an exercise in free association. That's what it was like. I mean, I'm trying not to be too harsh, but really, we should be very critical about it because it harms those of us who want to do a good job. But yeah, that's the sort of thing I mean. It's sort of, the investigation starts from the political premise to prove a political point and ends up bypassing the analysis and just putting a raw data dump and hope.
Oh, you glitched.
And now he's gone. It's a Linux and Mac problem again.
It is a Mac problem. But no, I mean, but he has a good, for those of you that are listening, we are looking at a still photo of Stephen Harris with making an O with his face. It is absolutely, there you are. You're kind of back. There we go. Sunspot. That was fabulous, man. That's, I love the way you.
Now my Mac tells me my internet connection's unstable. Like, thanks, after the event.
I could have told you that as well. Well, no, but your point, and let's go back to the Steve McAuliffe article on misusing Spiderfoot. You know, we've talked so many times over the last 2 years about not just running a tool. And gosh, I mean, everybody from Nico to, I think every single one of us have said at some point in time, OSINT is not about running a tool, doing a Google query. It's about the analysis of the data when you put it in context with the missions and the goals of the overall investigation. It's not just running a tool and going, hey, here you go, I got the output. And it, unfortunately, here in the United States, that's what was presented in a court brief, that it was just the raw results that happened to come up with, you know, all of these other connections. And it was very misleading the way they brought it up.
That's actually a trend that I'm seeing all over throughout any business, is that people just want to have tools. A lot of what I see in Germany is people don't want to invest in educating their employees, for example, on techniques and methods. Everyone just wants to have a tool. And if the tool can produce a fancy network visualization in any form, then people buy it. Because I used to say that is something that you can present to lieutenant colonels. It's flashy, it's colorful, it's bright. They don't have to understand it, but it looks good. And that's kind of the trend, because those are the people that make decisions. And if you go in there and say, okay, we have to train people to do this and this and this, and training costs this much and takes them off the job for this amount of time, that's bad. If you tell them there's a tool and you click on a button and a picture pops out and it looks cool, then people are happy. And I think that's kind of also what happened in this case. I mean, someone pushed some buttons in Spiderfoot, and they got this massive chart, and then they just read the information they wanted to read.
Yeah.
Which made no sense.
Yeah, that met their agenda, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and both of you probably run Spiderfoot HX scans, right? I've done several with just like all the plugins that I have access to turned on, and the amount of data that it pulls back, both relevant and less relevant, is astounding. I mean, hundreds of thousands of bits of data, and many of it is unrelated to what I need. It's that extra data. But yeah, I mean, somebody ran the tool to get some, to find some, you know, as a kind of just a scavenger hunt, but they were going in with an agenda, and they managed to find some data.
Yeah, it's confirmation bias on
That's
a
it.
big scale. That's just what it is, and that always comes back to bite you eventually.
And for a tool like that, I personally don't use Spiderfoot that much because it doesn't align with my type of investigations. But if you use a tool like that, you should have a broad understanding of the internet and IP communications and things like that. So that's like kind of the first mistake. If you take a baker and give him Spiderfoot and say, you know, you're a baker, you learn how to do this, but use Spiderfoot, he'll come out with a completely different assessment of the data he sees than an IT person looking into it. So you always have to have the fundamentals. You have to understand what's going on, how things work, and then you can use the tools.
Well, and that I think is a very important point. Of course, I mean, everybody here, I said that Spiderfoot is one of our corporate sponsors, and we appreciate, you know, their sponsorship. But we're bringing up these issues irrespective of the Spiderfoot issue. Just the idea that people are using tools without understanding how the tools work, and like you just said, Matthias, the background knowledge to be able to properly interpret the tool's output. I mean, you run a scan, you run a search on Google, you can kind of look through the web pages and all, but when you run a scan on some more advanced tools or tools that are pulling from a variety of sources like Shodan and Census and all these other places, and you get this result back, oh my God, this website or this analytics code or whatever is in here, that must mean that they're all working together. That's not necessarily how it works. Unfortunately, tools are created to ease the workload of the people that run them. So, you know, you take a junior analyst and you give them a tool, they can run that tool. It's the analysis of the data that comes out of that tool that's so important for, I would say, more experienced people or people that know how to research to analyze.
I think a
Agreed?
lot of times tools can be a starting point for in-depth investigations. So, for example, let's say we're looking into social media. It doesn't matter which type of social media, and you have a tool that automates the process of scraping friendships or follower lists or things like that. You know, that might give you an indication of who is linked to whom, but at the end of the day, you're still going to have to do some manual research to figure out if these people are actually linked. Or if it's an influencer on one side with 50,000 followers, and your target happens to be one of those followers, so there's no real life connection there, even though the system says there is some sort of connection. So you can always use this as a starting point, but it will never take away the analytical thing that you have to do afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely. I think people forget that intelligence is never the first stage of an investigation. It's the final stage, and whatever you're doing OSINT for, be that for journalism, for threat intelligence, for criminal investigation, like you have to turn that data into some sort of narrative for whoever you're doing it for. And I think that, I mean, I feel like we're always really critical about tools. We're not, but the reliance on tools is they give you all that data, but if you don't, you've got to turn it into a narrative. You know, you get those 100,000 Spiderfoot hits back for loads of different things. You have to be able to say what that means before you disseminate it to your client, to your boss, to whoever. And I think that's quite a hard skill, and it takes a lot of practice. And you can't really replace that with tools yet. And hopefully never will.
Well, and you know, people say, well, throw AI at it, throw machine learning, it'll figure out what's false positive stuff. Honestly, you know, you both know that I come from a cybersecurity background, and we've had similar types of things for decades, where people will run a tool to do a vulnerability scan. They will take the output of that tool and hand that to a customer and go, "Here you go. I pen tested your system." And there's false positives and false negatives. There's stuff that hasn't really been elaborated upon. And it's that understanding of what does it mean within the scope of the investigation? What does it mean, and why should the customer care? That's totally missing. And I think that we need, as a community, to not just be focused on the, hey, here's a tool that does this really neat thing, but it's here's a tool to make my job a little bit easier in collecting the data. But now I have to spend that time to analyze and figure out what it means.
And this isn't just an OSINT problem, it's an intelligence problem. So back when I was in SIGINT, you would do the same thing. You would collect metadata, basically who called whom. And then somewhere in this network, you'd see like this prominent node that was connected to everyone. So of course you can take this chart and you can go out and say, hey, you know, this phone number, this person must be super relevant. And then you do your investigations and you figure out maybe that's the pizza delivery boy in that area. Makes perfect sense that everyone calls him. So again, you have a starting point, and you can't just take this and say, okay, this is it. This is the kingpin, the hotshot, the lead Taliban, whatever. You have to do some more investigation, some more work, maybe even some more intelligence afterwards. Like kind of in SIGINT, you would take that selector, that phone number, and task it and see what he talks about. Or you take it to the human side, or you try to verify that information with other intelligence assets. So again, we're always back to this cycle. You have a piece of information, you have to try to verify it, and that sets a whole new cycle, or starts a whole new cycle.
One of our attendees brought up a Nocent brought up the idea that one of the ways that you can use tools is we've been talking about running a tool to begin an investigation, essentially to find out everything that's out there and then do the reduction of the data, the analysis of the data to figure out what matters. But Nocent brings up, you know, you could do your research and then use a tool to fill in those knowledge gaps, those places where we don't know about this, or to find places that maybe go further, or like Matthias just said, you know, to draw things together. If you have this really badass tool that can make the knowledge networks of who's connected to who, and you already know that person one, person two, and person three are important people in here, then that is helpful. And you still need to do the analysis, right?
And like we discussed before, I think one of the most important things is you understand the underlying technology or for example, the cultural background or whatever. Because if you don't have that knowledge, it's really hard to make your final assessment on the data. I mean, Nix, we the two of us wrote an article this year about tracking mobile phones based on IP addresses, because there was a specific incident on Twitter where someone said, I found someone based on the IP address, and it turns out it's not as easy as it was proclaimed. So again, if you don't understand how IP traffic works and geolocation of IP addresses, it's really hard to make an assessment on things that you get from platforms, tools, or something like that.
See, that's the problem, isn't it? If you have somebody that's prominent in one field that says, here's what I did, people will trust that person and go, wow, that must be the way. There are many other people that question that, go, wait, that we know more about it, and that's not the way that it works. So the question becomes is, well, it's not really a question. 2020 has been one of the biggest disinformation years. We had Jane Litvinenko on the show. What a great interviewee she was, talking about disinformation and misinformation. When people give out that wrong information, either willfully to mislead or just mistakenly, you know, to make to just as an accident, or because they don't understand the technology, we still need to call bullshit on it. We still need to say, that was a logical fallacy. You don't understand what's going on here. And I love the blog post that you two made to kind of show the technical details behind that geolocation issue.
And if you look into scientific research, I mean, none of us can say that we have never made a mistake in investigations or in things like that. It happens. So it is very nice if you have a peer review and people help you out by saying, okay, this might not make sense, or this makes more sense in a different way. So I think that's a very, very important fact. And this has been something that has been done throughout scientific research for decades, that, you know, you publish something, you think you're right based on what you have found, and other smarter people might find out that it's not that right. And it's okay. It's not an issue. It's not a problem. So we're seeing that a lot of people are posting information out there which could be mis or disinformation. But at the same time, we have a very, very large open community that is trying to correct that. It's trying to self-regulate that in a certain way, which is one of the positive aspects for me in 2020, that we do see a lot of stuff getting put out there that is wrong, factually wrong, but we see an equal amount of information or people out there kind of fighting that and battling that. And that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think having those dissenting opinions, I've seen a lot of exchanges on social media where people are asking for clarification about how a tool works. I remember the tool Camerica, the IP camera-based tool that draws data from Shodan. One of the things that was released, people were like, this is an amazing tool to find geolocated cameras. And I looked at the code and I reached out to the author and I said, hey, I think you're getting the IP, the geolocated places, the GPS coordinates for the cameras based upon their IP addresses. And that's coming from Shodan. Is that right? And the person said, yeah, absolutely. It says so in the docs here. And so taking that knowledge and essentially what you all noted in your article, that IP address geolocation is a best guess at best and can be hundreds or thousands of miles off at worst. Going back to the community and saying, hey, just to clarify, this is a great tool, and I think it's amazing that it's made, and you need to understand this before you use it and start to accidentally misuse it. So I do see a lot more of those types of exchanges, clarifications or helpful responses, and I'd like seeing that in 2020.
I think the danger also is if we have a crowdsourced approach for things, you will always have people in there that have a complete different opinion, a complete different background, and they will add a certain amount of, let's call it noise, which might also cause problems. So like everything that is good, as we started our discussion, can also be used for bad. And also this whole crowdsourced approach, which we're seeing everywhere. For example, Trace Labs or things like that. You have so many people just trying to contribute. But the question is, are these people qualified to contribute? And is this information actually as relevant? And that's the thing that I always look at. You always have a positive and a negative aspect of things. And at the end of the day, someone has to make the decision if it's relevant or not. But the more people contribute, of course, the more extremes you will have on both ends. High performers and low performers, to put it that way. And then a whole bunch of people in the middle that are kind of, you know, average.
Okay. Yeah, I think sometimes, I mean, I'm a big fan of crowdsourced stuff in general, but I think one of the limitations of it that we perhaps always aren't always aware of is that lack of a hierarchy, that lack of a final decision maker sometimes causes problems. So like, you know, if you're doing intelligence in the military, like before you do anything with it, your boss has to sign it off. Or if you're doing it for a newspaper, then your editor has the final say on whether we're going to publish or what we're going to say. And with crowdsourcing, and I'm going to use the famous example of the Reddit crowdsource investigation into the Boston bomber. And it's notorious for as an example of when crowdsourcing goes wrong and they identify the wrong guy and someone else got blamed whilst the FBI were looking at the Reddit suspects instead of the real suspects. It was a mess. That will stand for all time as a PowerPoint slide of the risks of crowdsource investigation, because you don't have that structure on when it's a free-for-all like that. And I think that it's not as exciting perhaps to work in a structured environment, but I think it does help polish up your work a little.
Yeah, and one of the things that we've done here on OSINT Curious is before our products go out, before we release the webcast, the 10-minute tips, the blog posts, we peer review. I know that Nick's has another blog that's ready to go out, but yet I haven't laid eyes on it and provided feedback. And we do that to provide you, our listeners, you, our watcher, our viewers, our readers, with what we feel is reliable, good quality data and things that you can count on. I have seen a whole bunch of other posts out there, and I'll use myself as an example. I have the webreacher.com blog that I've been running for years and posting things. The nice thing is it's freedom to post whatever I want. So I can write up a blog about whatever. That's not peer reviewed. The peer reviewing comes in when somebody that's smarter than me about the topic or brings up a different viewpoint posts in the comments, hey, have you thought about this? Or, ooh, you made an error there. The true measure of a seasoned person will be what they do with those comments. We get them here. I get them in a lot of different fashions. The ooh, have you thought about this? Or this could be used in a different way. And sometimes we'll go back and we'll update our blogs to reflect that. We'll take into account other people's views. But I have seen many cases where people will be like, hey, that's a cool comment. And they leave the blog post that they wrote that maybe has an analytical errors or other things out there. And that's really disturbing to me when I see that.
I think, Nix, you also raised an important issue that if you work in a structured environment, you have rules and regulations. You have boundaries. You have things that you can and cannot do. And that's also, for me, one of the downsides. If you crowdsource things to the complete community, you basically have no control what people are doing. And of course, you can sit down and you can say, don't do this, don't do that. But at the end of the day, you also have no possibility to sanction that in any way. For example, I think 2 or 3 weeks ago, there was a big discussion on if you should use password resets or things like that on social media. There might be areas where that is relevant. And for me, I think that would be in law enforcement or something like that. But there are a lot of dangers in that as well. So if, let's say, we have a crowdsourced project and we have tens or hundreds of people going out and trying to reset passwords on social media accounts, that might alarm certain intelligence targets. So again, positive aspect that people are working together. The negative thing is that they might not be doing the right thing in that situation.
Yeah. And the one of the big challenges with that is the understanding of what's legal and what's ethical, not just within our own locality or region or country, but many of the investigations that are done in some of these platforms, whether it is the Reddit Bureau of Investigations, the RBI, or whether it's Trace Labs or whether it's something else, a lot of these investigations will take people around the world, and understanding what the UK laws or the German laws are on open source intelligence, on hacking and those things, where those lines are things that many people don't consider. And I would hate to think that in the name of OSINT for good, somebody is accidentally committing a crime in some foreign country because of the techniques that they're using. But it's well within the realm of possibility.
Yeah, it's really hard to do, because when you're planning an OSINT case, you should do at least a basic risk assessment around OPSEC and things like that, but also what your legal parameters are. And it's sometimes hard to find out, but sometimes it's quite easy, especially with a password reset technique. Just as an example, it's quite easy to wander into stuff that's illegal. And okay, it's the internet. Your chances of being caught by law enforcement doing that sort of thing. And I'm saying this as someone who used to work in law enforcement.
Don't say it. In the UK, we used to catch people 100% of the time, but outside of
jail for 50, 60 years. No. Just because you don't get caught doing it doesn't mean, you know, if I, when I was still working in law enforcement, I have to show not just what my evidence was, but how I got it. And if I say, oh, by the way, how do you find out this guy's phone number? I just use the password reset technique on his Facebook account. Like, you know, that's like, that's big trouble. Like you have to show that you've abided by the laws and abided by the ethical codes and the terms and conditions of the platform operators too, I think. So if they're clear about it, saying it's not authorized, and then you go and start busting that door down, then it can come back to bite you.
Also, the fact that the basic risk assessment is something that's very important as well. Let's say we have some kind of crowdsourced investigation looking into a small company, and they have their own website, and they have like, you know, 20 or 30 hits on the website a day. And then one day they have 180. And since people are OPSEC aware, they're all using VPNs, and then they have 180 different countries basically accessing that website. You know, that might be a red flag for someone that looks into that. So again, a good idea to kind of support that, but then you have to have your risk assessment. What will happen from this? And is there anything out of the ordinary that might raise suspicion on the target side?
Well, I think that's one of the concepts that we haven't really tackled within OSINT Curious is that personal risk assessment and the professional risk assessment of what are the dangers in me conducting this investigation and what are the risks that I need to be aware of. I know that Nico created the personal risk blog post, but I would look forward to a blog from you two or one of you that would mention something about, hey, you know, just the top five things to think about before you start an OSINT engagement, whether it is OSINT for Good doing a Tracelab CTF or some other CTF, or whether it's doing a professional engagement. These are the main things that you need to be aware of.
Yeah, I promise this is coincidence. I have actually started to write one. Well, yeah, we probably won't be ready till after Santa's been, but we'll see.
Okay. All right. Well, one of the other things that I think is important for us, and I'll just go ahead and share my screen, is something that you did for us, Nix. And I'm extremely thankful to you for organizing all of our open source intelligence products, whether it's the blog posts, the 10-minute tips, or even references to some of the other videos that we've made in this Google Doc. The Google document URL that I'm showing on the screen is quite long, but you created this bit.ly/OSINT Curious Resources short URL. That short URL will bring you to a great doc. Do you want to just tell a little bit about it? I could talk about it, but you made it, right?
Yeah, it's basically we have a lot of resources of all different kinds on different platforms. We have some on YouTube, we have some on our own blog, and I basically organize them by theme because we know what people look for, we know what people want to find. But if you're looking for a specific thing, then sometimes navigating your way through YouTube playlists can be a bit tricky. So all our tutorials that we've done in whichever format are all in this document. So they're organized by theme, and you can just choose your theme and get a brief overview. And then the links to the actual resources are in there. And it's a live document. So as we produce more stuff, it gets added.
And thank you for doing that, because the search function on our website is helpful, but grouping them is even more so. Thank you. Cool. All right. So I'm going to ask each of you to tell me one of the OSINT Curious highlights from this past year. All right. So one blog post that you really remember, or one of your favorite webcasts or guests that was on the show, and why. And that's how we'll wrap up the show this week. All right. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. Why not? And then if we thought of the same thing, then Matthias has to come up with another one. a couple of highlights for me. The first was a blog post that I think Ritu put together about sock puppets. It was quite an in-depth guide about how to create sock puppets on different social media accounts. And it's my favorite for two reasons. One, because there's a high level of technical detail in there, which really makes a difference on something where you need to be very accurate and very precise when you're creating sock puppets. But also, it is by far the number one asked question I found in the OSINT community. Why does my account keep getting banned by Facebook? How do I create an account for Twitter that doesn't get flagged as a bot? How can I search on Instagram? And how do I create an account? It was all in there. So if you wanted like a one-stop shop for how to get on with the sock puppet, that was it. So in terms of value, that was my favorite thing. Do you want to mention my favorite webcast as well?
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
Yeah. It was a kind of, two joint favorite webcasts. And that was down to the guests, actually, because we've had some really awesome, really knowledgeable guests this year that we learned a ton of stuff from. And I love when we get people on there who are in a different field of OSINT to you, because it's like a school day. You forget you're supposed to interview them. You're just like, wow, that's amazing. It's like a lecture and you take all the stuff in. But two guests we have this year, both work in this information. First was Jane Litvinenko from BuzzFeed. I learned a ton of stuff from Jane about how she approaches and how she has the patience to deal with online disinformation. And also Yulia Bayer as well. She was really, really interesting. They both are in a very different realm of OSINT to me, but I learned a ton of stuff from those guys, and that they were probably my favorite webcasts.
Cool. Thank you, man. Appreciate you sharing those memories. Matthias, thoughts?
Three highlights. My personal highlight is joining the Avengers of OSINT on OSINT Curious. That was quite a surprise for me at the beginning of the year, and really happy that I'm allowed to be on this webcast and part of this group. When it comes to the articles, I think the one that I thought was the most important was Nico's article about the trauma when investigating things that you don't usually see on a daily basis. A lot of the work we do, if it's in law enforcement or disinformation, we see things that might be gruesome, that might be bloody, that might not be that nice. And even though we just look at it on a screen, it does have a severe mental impact to some people. So I think Nico pointing that out and making people aware of that was a very, very important blog post, in my opinion. When it comes to the guests we had this year, I really enjoyed listening to Ines. With her law enforcement background and a lot of we had similar ideas on a lot of things, but just hearing someone also say, you know, there's an all source approach and how to build like an OSINT team and using multiple elements put together, I really enjoyed that. And also when we had Amin on the webcast as well, very knowledgeable person with his background on French North African speaking OSINT, really enjoyed that. Yeah.
Those were some great, man. It's amazing. I'm looking back at our videos, and I'm looking at all of the different people that came on the show this year, and we're really thankful for just people agreeing to share their time with us. I was looking at the Jane Litvinenko talk too, because that was really interesting to me, just being able to talk with her and hear her thoughts. But also, I was thinking about the Yume Leroy talk and how, you know, just sharing all the different perspectives. And I mean, 2020 has really been a diversity year for us, as far as, like you were saying earlier, Stephen, that OSINT isn't just military intelligence. We've had journalists, and we've had disinformation specialists. We've had people that are recruiters like Jan on here. And I love the fact that all of them make us smarter. That was,
We actually haven't had someone with a military background, a current military background for OSINT on the show, which I would personally be very interested in hearing how OSINT in modern military operations plays a role. I mean, I know it, but I'd like to hear a perspective maybe from another country. So
that'd be a classified briefing.
That person, but that would be something really cool for 2021.
I have to disguise their voice and put a paper bag on their head.
Exactly. We'll put a Zoom background in front of them, a Zoom foreground or something.
Yeah.
And just to hit a point that you mentioned, Matthias, after you mentioned the Avengers of OSINT, somebody went out and bought the Avengers of OSINT.group, and that redirects to the OSINT Curious project. So if you visit OSINTcurio.us or Avengers of OSINT.group, both of them will get you to OSINT Curious. Personally, for me, the posts that I really enjoyed are very similar to what you both were talking about, that, you know, we can't know everything there is. And I think once you realize that it's okay to not know everything about every sub-discipline within OSINT, you become more open to learning. And I've really enjoyed all of the people that have posted blog posts about social media, because, you know, the OSINT work that I do sometimes doesn't take me deep into Facebook or Instagram or TikTok. And we've had a number of posts by TechNazette, by other people that have shared their experiences there. And I've really appreciated that and learning from them. So, cool. All right. Well, we are just at the top of the hour, gentlemen. I thank you for your time. Is there anything that you want to say? This, so for those of you listening, For those of you watching, this will be our last webcast of 2020. We've decided to call it quits on a high note here and cancel our last webcast so that you and we can spend time with our loved ones and say goodbye to what has been a very up and down 2020. So this will be our last webcast. Nix, is there anything that you want to share before we go?
Nothing too exciting other than to say I've had a great time on the webcast this year. And I've managed to meet in real life and online some really cool people through this webcast, both other people, members of the group, and some of our viewers. And I've really enjoyed meeting people. And I hope to do more next year. And I hope everyone watching or listening has a great Christmas and New Year.
And correct me if I'm wrong, didn't you come out on this this webcast from, I mean, you were Nix Intel, and then partway through 2020, I think you then went ahead and said, I'm Stephen Harris, Nix Intel.
I did, yeah. The long story short for that is obviously when I first joined, I still worked in law enforcement, and it was never like a fake identity. I had a pseudonym because it was easier to keep work and my real self and my online self separate. Now I no longer work in law enforcement, and so it's less of an issue. But now everyone knows me as Nix Intel, so I'll just stick with that.
I look at you and I'm like, Nix, what's up? Cool, man. Well, I can tell you from the rest of the OSINT Curious project, we have really enjoyed you being on the project this year and all of your contributions, and we look forward to, you know, 2021. Unfortunately, Matthias, there's something that we... No. There's good news and there's bad news. Matthias, yeah, you've been voted off the island. No, of course not. Matthias,
I'll make German OSINT Curious.
I just bought a shirt. No.
Internet-Recherche, neugierige Internet-Recherche. So that's... I'd have to come up with a better name, but I'll figure it out.
You do it? Matthias, you also joined OSINT Curious this year as being one of our new advisory board members, and we have absolutely been thrilled to have you aboard. Is there anything that you want to say before we wrap up?
Just like Nix, I am very grateful that I have met so many amazing people this year on the project, and as supporters of the project, I am grateful that I have learned so much from the people on this project, and also through all the feedback that we get. Unfortunately, these meetings have all just been virtual. So I am looking forward to 2021 to finally have a beer with all of you. That's kind of my goal for 2021.
In person. Yeah, I'm extremely hopeful that things will change and we will be able to do some live recordings in person or live streamings or something like that in person of us together at some event, because really, I've never seen below this on any of you. And I don't want to right now, because I know that we're working at home sometimes, that with pant choices are different, but yeah, it would be nice to be able to, you know, the optional part, right? Cool. Well, that is pretty much our episode from this past week, everybody. And yes, Nocent, yes, Dutch and I were in the same room. We did we did the OSINT Curious webcast one time when I was over in Amsterdam, and Nico was on one side of the room, I was on the other, and then halfway through I went over and I stood next to him. But thank you to you all. I mean, our attendees, our listeners, our viewers, our readers, you all are the ones that we are trying to reach. And if we produced blog posts and webcasts and nobody listened and nobody read and nobody provided us content and feedback and suggestions, and it would be a lot more of a boring type of labor of love. And so thank you for participating in our little part of the OSINT community. And I will speak on behalf of all of the OSINT Curious members here when I say we're really looking forward to sharing information a little differently in 2021, a little bit easier, and really connecting with more of you wherever you happen to be. So have a safe and happy holiday season, and we will catch up with you in 2021. So long, everybody. Take care.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, don't we have to say that thing? I think we have to say that thing.
I'm going to try it.
Oh, well, we're going to try it. All right. I'm going to count out. Okay. It'll be like on three. So it'll be one, two, boom. Okay. I know it didn't work last time, Stephen. We got to do this. Okay. Ready? One, two, stay open.
Curious.
I'm going to speed that up when I make the video so it actually sounds like we set it at the right speed. But everybody, take care. Have a great new year, a great holiday season. We'll catch up with you in 2021. So long, everybody.
Bye.